Okay, Esther, I think we're ready. Good morning. It's December 14th, 2007. The North Dakota Public Service Commission is meeting today for its regularly scheduled meeting. Actually, we're 2 days off. Usually it's held on Wednesdays. Today we're doing it on Friday morning because I had a conference out of town today, and my fellow commissioners were kind enough to say they'd hold over the meeting until today. We're meeting in the 12th floor of the State Capitol Building. And are there any announcements from my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Clark or Commissioner Kramer?
Good morning. Welcome.
I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 First, we'll go to SW1. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 1 day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU07766. Northern States Power Company's proposed 345 kV electric transmission line from Fargo, North Dakota to Monticello, Minnesota.
Second.
This proposed project, we've been talking about it for several years as the CapEx 2020 project. And it consists of quite a number of lines, actually 670 miles total within the state of Minnesota, and part of that going into proposed to go into North Dakota and South Dakota. For example, there's a section from Twin Cities to La Crosse that's approximately 150 miles of 340 kV line. From the Twin Cities to Fargo, this is an approximately 250-mile, 345 kV project. The Twin Cities in Brookings County, this is approximately 200-mile, 345 kV line. And this is between the Twin Cities and Brookings County, South Dakota. And then the Bemidji to Grand Rapids section. This is approximately 70-mile, 230 kV project in northern Minnesota. Now, Xcel Energy, Great River Energy, Minnesota Power, Missouri River Energy Services, and Outer Tail Power are all partners in this project. They anticipate that the segment from Alexandria to Fargo will be placed in service by 2015. And they anticipate that that line will cost between $390 million to $560 million, depending on route selection and design. They anticipate requesting a route permit next summer or next fall. And they also anticipate that they would like some flexibility may be necessary in order to coordinate the regulatory processes in North Dakota and Minnesota, as well as a federal environmental review, so that a common border crossing may be established. That's the main thing that is of interest in this case. There haven't been too many transmission lines constructed in recent years which cross state borders. And so our state, our North Dakota Commission and the Minnesota Public Commission, will need to work carefully together on this particular part of the project to establish that border crossing. If you take a look at the map, which I've put out on the table, you will see that there's the possibility that the line could cross the Red River either approximately 30 miles south of Fargo, or it could cross around the city of Fargo. So there's quite a few choices here. And so our commission will be working closely with the Minnesota Commission on designing a process to ensure that this can happen in a meaningful way for both states. Everything seems to be in order today, and I recommend approval of the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 SW2. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 1 day, and assess a filing fee of $5,000 in case number PU07766. Outer Tail Corporation's proposed 230 kV electric transmission line reroute in Richland County, North Dakota.
Second.
Now, this is A request to reroute a portion of Otter Tail Power Company's Hankinson to Ellendale 230 kV transmission line in Richland County. This is a very small section of the line. It is being proposed to be moved due to high water levels, and the transmission facility is an integral component of the 230 kV transmission system, and it integrates baseload electric generation at the Big Stone plant in eastern South Dakota and the Hoot Lake plant in western Minnesota and wind generation in southeastern North Dakota. And it also serves some retail load in southeastern North Dakota, northeastern South Dakota, and western Minnesota. They're proposing to reroute only a 0.64 mile, about 0.6 mile portion near Grass Lake in Richland County, west and north of Lidgerwood. And the estimated total cost of construction is approximately $260,000. I have a map before me, and it shows that the proposed route is, you would see, goes across Grass Lake, which is now Grass Lake, and they're proposing that it would be moved up to the north slightly and to go along a road that goes along the edge of Grass Lake for that small change. This is just the very start of this process, as the last one was also. This is just to acknowledge the letter of intent to shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to one day and assessing the filing fee. So in both of these cases, this is the very start of the process.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW3 has been withdrawn. SW4, I move the commission close out contract number AM54007 with Material Testing Services, LLC, for completion of material testing at the Williams County Road 9 Phase 2 AML site. Okay, this is rather routine. We're just closing out this contract. The contract amount was $26,650, and work was completed for a total cost of $26,542.50. It was all completed in a satisfactory manner, and everything looks to be done fine.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
SW5. I move the commission adopt the third order amending initial order in Northern States Power Company's electric rates, case number PU4092399.
Second.
Okay, those of you who are familiar with commission numbers for orders would recognize that this is an order from 1992 that the commission is amending. All right, that's the last time that the commission made a decision on Northern State Power Company's electric rates. There were two paragraphs in that order that the company asked the commission to review to see whether we still thought that they were pertinent 15 years later. And so we did that. And we issued an opportunity for hearing on October 24th, 2007, which set November 27th as a deadline for filing a request for hearing or comments on this matter. And no requests for hearing or comments were received. And the two issues that were before the commission were the finding of fact number 111 required that NSP conduct a compensation comparison of union wages and demonstrate to the commission that it made efforts to bring its union wages in line with the rest of the industry. And NSP contended that a comparison is not feasible because the information is not available and there's no legal restraints to acquire the information. And finding of fact number 166 in that order required that a long-term incremental class cost of service study be filed with NSP's next rate application, and NSP contended that conducting such a study is costly and no longer relevant. Our staff has reviewed these issues carefully and has made recommendations to the commission about these matters. Today, the commission finds that a comparison of union wages and non-union wages is not required, but that NSP should file with its rate increase application a comparison of general wage increases between its non-union and its union employees since 1992 and a summary of its last salary survey for non-union employees. We also are finding that a long-run incremental cost study by customer class would be of minor value and is not cost-justified. An incremental cost study means that you look at what will it cost to add the last customer to a system. What is the cost of adding one more customer to a system? And so we are not going to be requiring that at this time.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Kramer.
All I have are a couple of cost of gas adjustment announcements. NSP is increasing the cost of gas by 56.83 cents per decatherm, changing the residential customer cost of gas from 788 to 845 per decatherm. For residential consumption, representative of December, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $8.07 higher than last month and about $13.12 lower than December of last year. Great Plains is increasing its cost of gas charged to residential customers by 69.87 cents per decatherm, changing a customer bill from 958 to 1027.99 cents per decatherm. The cost of gas in a bill typical of December will be about $13.14 higher than last month and about $11.42 higher than the same time last year.
Okay, does that conclude the items? Mm-hmm. All right, and Commissioner Clark.
TC1, I move the commission adopt the order approving revisions to Quest Corporation's Performance Assurance Plan and modifications to Quest Corporation's Performance Indicator Definition Document, case number PU0658.
Second.
As you recall, Quest is presently under a wholesale service quality agreement, basically, which ensures certain performance standards are met in how they provision wholesale services to their competitors that use portions of their network. As part of that process, there is what's called a six-month review, but I think in practice is kind of an ongoing review, I've noticed. In any case, the six-month review process had come out of it a stipulation between Quest and a number of competitive carriers in the state, and the commission had teed that particular stipulation, which changes and modifies some of the performance indicators and the penalties that are associated with failure to meet the performance metrics. The commission put that out in July of this year. It was a notice of opportunity for comment and notice of opportunity for hearing. We received no comments back from any of the interested parties. In this case, the interested parties would be other competitive local exchange companies within the state. We did not receive any comments. So this order would adopt those revisions and modifications. It also allows for the commission to revisit some of these if some pending investigations and other multi-state collaboratives that are currently ongoing reveal anything that would cause us to want to change that because of the region itself changing.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07742 granting the request of Scott G. Foss, DBA Lone Prairie Grain, Rugby, North Dakota, to operate a 107,000 bushel grain warehouse at Tunbridge, North Dakota, effective November 27th, 2007. The applicant has met all the license applications, and actually it's been temporarily authorized and will be formally noticed if approved now.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07770, granting the request of J&K Grain LLC to operate a 450,000 bushel grain warehouse at Morton, North Dakota, effective immediately. I further move the commission grant the request of J&K Grain LLC to operate its grain warehouse at Morton, North Dakota, on an as-needed basis.
Second.
There's a quirk in state law that indicates that if a grain warehouse isn't going to be operating and receiving grain during normal business hours, that they have to receive permission from the commission to have that type of arrangements. The reason that J&K Grain has asked for that is J&K is going to be operating this facility on an as-needed basis for the purpose of storing grain for the U.S. Bio Hankinson LLC ethanol facility. And they will be technically a public warehouse, but really the reason for it is to handle the corn that will be coming into that ethanol facility.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
And before we go to questions, I would like to just do a few announcements about the Xcel Energy North Dakota electric rate increase filing. We have a number of items on this on our administrative agenda today, setting up hearing dates and determining when public input meetings, et cetera, will be held. The commission does not have a great deal of time to consider rate case increases. It's about, is it 7 months now, Alana?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
7 months.
6 months from the date that we suspended.
Right,
I think,
six months from the date we suspended. And also there's the also the fact that Xcel Energy is applying for an interim adjustment of 14.96% to the non-fuel rate component of electric bills, and that would that would be effective February 5th, 2008, if the commission finds that that number is correct. And so I wanted to give the public, I know that NSP has put out a press release about this, but I wanted the public to hear from the commission about the timelines in this case as well. So the commission needs to make a determination about that interim increase before February 5th, 2008, which is only a month and a half approximately from now. And this is a substantial increase for Xcel customers. As they, in the fact sheet that Xcel put out, they explain that they're under their proposal, the average bill, which is 750 kilowatt hours for a residential customer, would increase by about $7.60. That's per month. So then that would be approximately $91 a year. So we do want people to be aware of this case, and to we've already had a number of comments come in to Tom Rafferty and to the commission about this case. And so we are looking forward to more public comment on this case as it moves forward.
And we've talked about interim rates quite a bit in the past, but just as a reminder, when the commission takes it up, we're not indicating that we
approve
interim rates as a concept. What we're doing is we're making sure that the interim rates that Xcel is entitled to in the statute meet the statutory language. So it
okay, are there any questions?
This is the, based on this, the first rate increase they've had in about 15 years.
That's correct.
We were kind of expecting it to work.
Yes. We were expecting it would be filed.
Mm-hmm. And given the fact that the window is now 6 months, talk about what that means as far as staff work on it. How do you get it accomplished?
Great
yes,
question.
Yes, we are. We have on our admin agenda today to approve a... what do you call that, Mike? It's a proposal for bids? Request for proposal for consultants to work on this case. The commission at admin today will be determining whether we want to set a limit of $75,000 for that work or whether we wish to have that be more open when we send out those requests for proposals. That's the first step. We are asking for help on this case from an outside consultant because this Xcel case is a very big case. We have a small staff, excellent small staff, but they cannot possibly delve into this in the detail that is needed in that short time period. So we're going to do our best to do a good investigation of this case through our staff in the role of we haven't had one of these for a while, so in the role of
be deciding that too. Advocacy.
Advocacy staff, and then, of course, we will be determining who will be advisory to the commission. So that's the advocacy staff role that we'll be looking at spending money on today.
It might, just from you'd ask kind of the procedural question, Dave, it may make sense to keep in mind that the way North Dakota handles it, and it's because of the way our statute is constructed, is significantly different than the way most states do. I think North and South Dakota are probably the only two utility commissions that I'm aware of that handle it in the way that we do, which is, and again, it's not the commission's choice, it's just how the legislature has chosen to structure it. In most states, when a utility files for a rate increase application, there is a separate agency of state government, a consumer council in a lot of states they call it. Sometimes it's housed within the Attorney General's office, but it is a separate agency within state government that will act as the advocacy role before the commission, and the commission really is more like a court, solely a judge and jury, and the staff that's available to the commission is solely advisory to the commission itself as they process the case. Here, we don't have that. And like I said, in South Dakota, they don't have that either. So what we do is we split our staff. Some become advisory, some become advocacy. The advisors, the commission can talk to about the case. The advocacy, after that point, we can't. They become, in effect, the consumer counsel and bring the case before us and act as advocates for the public interest. As far as and what that necessitates, given our small staff, is that we have to hire consultants to help that advocacy staff do their job. These are extraordinarily large files. We could get one for you, but it's 2 3-ring binders that stand about that tall. There were boxes out in the hall yesterday. I don't know if they're still out there today, but all those boxes that are stacked are the filings that were lugged up here to give us the paperwork. In fact, I think when it first came in, it's filed electronically, but the files were too large for us to
accept.
So staff said, you'll get the file by paper on Monday. We weren't able to distribute them around electronically. It was just too voluminous.
I would anticipate that there would be interest in this case, not only from residential customers, but also from industrial and commercial customers as well, because the increases are substantial for all three classes of customers. And we welcome that interest.
I think one of the things we're talking about on admin, Mike, are we talking about your suggestion regarding notices for rate increase for cases? Is that on admin this week? Or
I didn't put that on there.
Okay.
Were more of the discussion about timing, public input, how to get the word out.
Sure. But we're required by law to send out notices.
Right. Oh, no. What Mike had sent an email to the whole commission just talking about, in some states there's a kind of a formal notice requirement, say 6 months prior to the filing of a case, and it's not
too
specifically
much.
Applicable.
Minnesota has a 60-day pre-filing of information that allows staff to get a running start. Of course, they are also not confined to the 6 months that we're confined to, so they have a lot more time to work on these things, and it's an issue that probably after the rate case we can start thinking about for
it's
the legislative
to
take to the legislature the next time, because they really have put a very tight timeline that's probably too tight to do the job that should be done for the ratepayers, which is why we need to hire consultants.
It's true, isn't it, that they gave you this timeline at a time when you were not, frankly, getting any. Right?
That's exactly correct, Dale, and I think the circumstances are such that it's
correct.
Time to revisit that.
I don't think that's correct. We've always been receiving rate cases, and
sure,
it was the pressure from the companies to reduce that time period. And so, but I do think it's something that we that could be addressed.
Let me put it another way, isn't it true that you're going to be getting a lot more of these because,
this is the first one from Xcel in 15 years, isn't it?
I mean, utilities are refurbishing their plants.
That's correct.
New plants.
It's the nature of the
business.
That's
exactly
right.
Correct.
The other thing to keep in mind is the utilities have years to put these things together, and the commission is required by statute to go through all of that information in 6 months. This Xcel increase, I don't know how long they've been talking about it, but it seems as though it's been something that they've been working on within their company for and worked on. Yeah, I mean, they've had
cases in other states they've already gone through.
Yeah, they've had many, many, many months to put it together. So I don't think it's too much to ask to give the commission a little bit more time to look at it.
This is a large case aside from the fact that it involves a substantial rate increase. What makes it large?
Well, there are so many issues, a lot of data. The fact when you just mentioned, Dale, the fact that this is going to become more common because there's greater investment going into the construction and refurbishing and recharging, renovating plants. Well, that's exactly what this case is all about. So far, from what I've read so far. And so that means there are a lot of things to verify, a lot of data to verify, costs and how they should be allocated.
And it includes a lot of mandates from the state of Minnesota.
I haven't read any of those yet, but we're going to assume there's some in there. Well, I haven't found them yet in the case. But
what is your authority over the interim rate increase? Can it just go into effect on February?
Just to make sure that it meets the legal standard.
Requirements of the law.
Yeah, we have.
Well, we'd have to get that section of law for you to take a look at.
It has to do with, there's certain, There are certain parameters that are put on. For example, it has to be rate base items of a similar nature as to what were approved in the last case. I mean, there are things at the same rate of return. So there's some just kind of math that you have to run on it. But outside of running the math and checking the numbers, we don't have any discretion to deny an interim rate increase if it meets the standard of the law.
I guess the point I'm getting to is, isn't the 11.5% increase in February,
actually,
isn't that a pretty sure thing?
Actually, it's a 14.96% increase to the non-fuel rate.
The interim. The interim is 11.
Nope. I'm just telling you, it's all that number, but it's actually 14.96% to the non-fuel rate component. You know how on...
That's very interesting, but I guess I'm interested okay. If I'm an electric ratepayer, what my bill is. I don't care about the non-fuel or whatever it is you said.
I think what we'll need to do is just come up with the number.
Isn't the 11.5% interim rate increase a pretty sure thing?
On the interim?
It
just depends whether the formula carries out whether that meets the requirements of the formula.
There'll be an interim rate increase.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm looking at the company's summary. They're talking about essentially reconstruction of a couple of plants,
mm-hmm.
and they're also talking about their nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is it going to be to evaluate all of these aspects of it? I mean, we don't have nuclear plants in North Dakota. We don't.
No, but North Dakotans enjoy the benefits of low-cost nuclear generated electricity. So, that's a factor. As far as the other plants, I think the big challenge, Dale, is going to be who pays for what. And Commissioner Weefall talked about mandates in Minnesota. I haven't found those referenced yet in the case, but I haven't read every page yet. But as an example, I think that becomes a bit of a complicating factor. We have to be able to dig real hard, real deep, and find out what costs should North Dakotans bear and what costs should they not bear. If it's a mandate by another state, then maybe North Dakotans shouldn't pay for that. But we don't know. We don't know that.
Other states, what are we talking about?
Whether there's some sort of a mandate that increases the cost of the electricity because of some environmental mandate that exceeds federal standards, for example.
In days gone by, what used to happen is the utility was just told by all the states, look, go out and build power at the cheapest cost.
Right.
And then it was very easy to allocate that out from there. You figured out how much flowed to each state, and you divided the pie up accordingly. What's happened in recent years, and not to just point fingers at Minnesota, but I think nationwide this has been a trend, what's happened in recent years is states have become more activist in trying to do things like impose environmental mandates that might be above a federal standard, like trying to lure plants to their state or maybe mandate plants be built in their state. And what it means is that then these costs are imposed above and beyond what the low-cost resource might be. And so then the question is, who pays for that additional cost? Should it be the ratepayers of the state that impose the additional cost? What obligation do other state ratepayers have to chip in to pay for those mandates that they didn't have any voice through their legislature in? That's really the crux of the issue,
I think. Can you give me a few examples of mandates that the state of Minnesota has?
Well, right now, and I don't know whether any of those costs are included in this, but let's say right now the state of Minnesota has a 25% renewable portfolio standard by the year 2025. In North Dakota, we have a goal. Our state has set a goal of utilities having 10% of their portfolio be renewables by the year, is it 2015, something like that. I'd have to check that last date, but that's a difference between the goal means that it's not binding, the renewable portfolio standard means it is a requirement.
Another couple of examples would be what they call their seabed proposals in Minnesota, community-based energy development, which basically mandates that certain generation be placed in communities in Minnesota. So we'll want to see if those type of costs are in here. They had one particular plant that was basically mandated, an IGCC, integrated gas combined cycle plant, up in the Iron Range. I think it was the Excelsior plant, which has been essentially mandated on all public utilities in Minnesota that happen to own nuclear generation facilities, which is all of one XL. So, I mean, it's things like this that can cause...
What I was thinking of, too, is that they're going to make the High Ridge plant from a coal plant to a gas plant. I mean, that will mean it runs more expensively. What kind of consideration?
It can, but there are also, that's the problem. There are also environmental considerations, and if those environmental considerations are paramount in making a decision to go from one fuel to another, and those environmental considerations are due to, say, the MERP program, for example, the Minnesota Emissions Reduction Program, I'm not sure North Dakota should pay for that. On the other hand, the advantage of natural gas is it's more dispatchable, and that becomes pretty important in the regional grid. So there are just so many things to consider, which is why it's going to be a very difficult case.
How many electric customers does XL Energy have in North Dakota?
Well, they have all their – Mike can get you that number. It's Fargo,
usually we have that.
Grand Forks,
it seems like 80,000 or 90,000.
Is that for you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the number that pops in my mind is like – between 75 and 80,000.
That sounds about right.
And what do you think is an appropriate time for being able to review this? I mean, you have 6 months. What is it?
Well, we'll be talking. We haven't talked about that yet, you know, as a commission.
Well, you can talk about it right now.
Yeah. You know, Dale, I would say that
the... I want input from our staff. I think this... Thank you on what they're... Well, no, I want to have input from our staff about... When we get this, you know, request for proposal and when those come back in and all of that, I think this.
Yeah, I don't mind talking about it at all, Dale, because it's not going to apply to this case. I do think we could look at a little bit of history. I mean, for example, what was it before they began shortening it, and how many times did they shorten it? You know, 1 month here, 1 month there. I don't know the entire history, but I bet we could look back in history, find out what a good appropriate timeline was at one point that worked well, and for some reason, the legislature felt compelled to shorten that timeline, and maybe we just need to go back to that. That'll be a discussion for pre-legislative session discussion.
I mean, I think reasonable minds can come together, the commission, utilities, and legislators, and say, okay, 6 months seems too short. What is the right time frame? I think the unfortunate thing about this was really shoved on the commission. It was one where a bill gets introduced kind of at the last minute, and the utility company goes out and lobbies to get this thing trimmed back to a very arbitrary number that's clearly now too short.
And see, the thing is, Dale, we've talked before about the scales of being out of balance, maybe too much for the utility in this particular situation. On the other hand, the other scales of imbalance that I see is I hate to give another state, a neighboring state, so much more advantage over this process than our state, too, because that can lead not only to the utility having an advantage over the ratepayer in North Dakota, but customers in other states having an advantage over the ratepayer in North Dakota, and I find that as offensive as anything.
Can you tell me how much of a segment of North Dakota that this 345 kV line is going to...
Yes, if you look at the map that's set there out on the table,
I did look at it. You will see
that in the color map that I have here, well, that it reflects that. Yes, yeah, it is.
Yes.
It will reflect
I'll
that.
I'll get you a colored one.
It could come across anywhere. The crossing into North Dakota could occur anywhere from the South Dakota-North Dakota border up to north of the city of Fargo.
If it crosses down by Breckenridge-Wapton, for example, then it'll run probably along the I-29 corridor north, and you might have 40, 50 miles. On the other hand, if it crosses the Red River near Moorhead and Fargo, it'll maybe be a mile or two. The real important thing, I think, Dale, about this CapEx 2020, in particular this line from Fargo to Alexandria, is not so much the siting of it in North Dakota, but what it does, its potential to become an integral part of reducing that, loosening up that constraint at the North Dakota-Minnesota border for export.
Well, just so that I'm clear, we don't know yet how much of the power line is going to be.
No, that's the whole issue that's before the commission, and we talked about that before you came in, about how an important part of this process is going to be working with the state of Minnesota to determine a crossing point for that line and to have processes in both states that can reach the same conclusion.
I don't know if it'll be working with Minnesota as XL will say, here's where we want to cross.
No, yeah. That isn't correct.
Minnesota
can't bind us.
I'm not saying that Minnesota is going to bind us. I'm saying that This is the process that states have been talking about for years in talking about cooperating as far as finding crossings for interstate transmission lines. And it doesn't mean that one state has to, that's why I'm saying we are working with them on this process, and so that both states have a voice in this matter. So it doesn't mean that, but it does require the states then to look at a process. And Jerry Lean has already been in contact from our staff with the Minnesota staff about getting this process started.
You mean so, working with the PUC in Minnesota?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay. So the $100,000 filing fee.
Yes.
How is that determined?
It's based on the total cost of the project.
Okay. So it's a percentage.
Mm-hmm. Well, $100,000
is the maximum.
Typically, when a company presents one of these cases, do they shoot high, thinking that you're going to take them down, or do they actually calculate out what they actually need?
You mean as far as the filing fee?
No, rate cases.
You're back to the rate case. Mm-hmm.
The Excel case, yeah. I mean, do they typically say, we need 15% when really they only need 9% and they expect you guys to take them down to 9, or are they actually calculating what they need?
I think you should ask Excel that question.
But we've been suspicious for years. No.
Well, I mean, how
it's a variable, it's a logical question.
A different way to approach this, how do you approach this? Do you assume that they're padding their request?
We look at what we think are their required costs for them to meet a certain return on investment.
If negotiation of a settlement begins, and you know, in these cases it oftentimes does, that's separate from the commissioners as well. And then in the end, if you start considering the costs of settlement versus the costs of continuing. And so, no, our decision is based very scientifically, economically.
Given that they're building this, I'm talking about the power line now. Mm-hmm. Given that they're
Thank you.
No problem. Same company.
Given that they're building the line from south to north, how long do you think it's going to take for them to get to where?
They're anticipating that they would have this finished by 2015.
And you expect that you'll be able to have to, they'll get to the point where you'll have to deal with it when?
Actually, they're anticipating they're going to file their application, because this is just the letter of intent we've received today. Later this summer, July or August.
Do you think they'll have the whole corridor and route set before they start construction, or are they going to?
I anticipate that it's going to look like this. I think there's going to be options.
Well, I guess what I'm
That's why we have this. I don't know that this issue is going to be settled in the next 6 months.
It would be a very hard way, however, to go to landowners and start getting easements if you're dealing with options.
But they have already sent out a letter to all of the landowners in North Dakota reflected in this blue area. Mm-hmm. Did you say something, Sue? Okay.
As soon as
and some of the landowners, they won't have to worry at all because they'll choose
another. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
So can I ask about, nobody really knows what's the specifics are in the Keystone-Fargo negotiations that are going to happen Monday.
Nobody here knows, yeah.
And they know they're not saying.
Correct.
Until they vote on it. But how is this going to affect the case?
Personally, I don't know that it affects us very much at all, in all honesty, Dave, because, you know, our job is still the public interest, and it's possible that a settlement between Fargo and Keystone could be in the public interest, or we might feel like there's more public to protect than just the Fargo water supply, as an example. And not knowing, of course, what they're negotiating. But really, we still have 218 miles to site, and every inch of it's important to us for a number of reasons. And, you know, quite honestly, we might have a stricter requirement of Keystone than Fargo agrees to at a certain location.
I mean, the city of Fargo can't decide whether or not you all approve.
That's exactly correct.
I mean, is this, crudity, but is this just window dressing for the city of Fargo? I mean, they have to justify that
these issues are very important to the city of Fargo, or they would not have made this effort.
Well, I mean, is this,
I do not.
Well, that's a question. That's a question for them, though. I mean, that's
right. Well, we're negotiating with Keystone. They're just—it's just a fig leaf to.
Well, you should ask them, but I don't believe that. I think these issues are very important to the of the city of Fargo.
I mean, they spend a lot of, what I'm getting at, they spend a lot of money on consultants and lawyers and their own time. You know, they ought to have something to show for it.
You know, to be honest, Dale, you know, I have no idea, and I wouldn't begin to answer that question directly, obviously. but I would say this, that this commission is very capable of looking out for Fargo's interests and will, as well as the interests of Valley City and Lisbon and Kindred and Oaks and Fordville and Park River and every other city and every farm and every piece of land up and down this entire route. And so we, although I appreciate that Fargo's got a specific concern and they've raised it, and we were, you know, happy to give them the opportunity to bring it before the commission, and I'm pleased that they're negotiating a settlement with Keystone. But at the end of the day, it still falls on the three of us to decide what's best. And
we had
and
we'll a settlement
that.
Filed between the water users of the. And a group of water users and the Enbridge pipeline in the Enbridge case, which is before the commission at this time. So it isn't unusual for a settlement to be arrived at between a party in the case or even a person who's just very interested in the case and the company. So,
but that wasn't a siting issue. I mean, they had...
Well, they had all those
it wasn't really a settlement. It was an agreement that they'd sort of reached.
Right.
Well, it was.
Yeah, so... See, Dale, it'd be fun to speculate, and as you might imagine, we probably all have in our minds what it is they are discussing, and there might be some issues that aren't relevant necessarily to us. Maybe they're discussing something that's completely different than the siting of the project.
Okay. Anything Maybe. Else before we get on to our admin agenda?
I mean,
you understand, Dale, the problem is you understand this pretty well.
Oh, I was thinking of Dennis Wallace, the mayor's letter.
Yes.
And when I read the mayor's letter, what occurred to me wasn't, gee, he's trying to protect their water supply.
Right.
I don't think that was the point of it at all.
Well,
right.
And, you know, now it's being, well, we were trying to protect our water supply. And if you read the letter at all, a fair reading of the letter doesn't support that.
Right.
Well, we'll just have to see what happens here. All right.
Thank you. Perhaps so. TransCanada is negotiating with the Canadian government on behalf of, you know, City of Fargo. I don't know.
We'll just see what happens here and what gets filed with the commission. All right. Thank you very much. We'll break four. We'll now end the...